Hi, I'm Sam Patterson. You're listening to the EdTech Podcast, Kano Takeover.
Brilliant. So I'm really excited to be getting involved in this podcast interview, especially because I'm here with Sam Patterson. And you can find Sam on Twitter at Sam Patchu. So that's P-A-T-U-E. And just to give you a little bit of a taster, Sam is the Makerspace Coordinator at Echo Horizon School. He's a Google certified teacher, and he's the author of the blog and book Beyond the Hour of Code. And he also engages students, as I understand, through the power of puppets and podcasting. So what isn't there to like among that selection of goodies? And Sam, very much a big welcome to you.
Thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be here.
Wonderful. So first up, and I know we're going to keep this like a punchy interview because you're off to school in 20 minutes or so. Could you tell us a little bit about Echo Horizon School? So in terms of what type of school it is, the setting, sure. The scale, and so on.
Sure. Echo Horizon is an independent school in Culver City. So just down the street from Sony Studios. We've got this pre-kindergarten through sixth grade school that was designed as a mainstreaming environment for deaf and hard of hearing students. So 10% of the students at the school have profound hearing loss, and they have specialists that work with them. But as far as the rest of the school, we've got 160 kids through seven grades. So it's really small, and they're dedicated to progressive education, and we really work on student empowerment, having the kids do great work, and just the luxury of working somewhere like this is you have so much face-to-face time with each kid.
So I'm sure loads of people listening in, that's like their ultimate dream. So your role specifically is as Makerspace Coordinator. So one thing that I love, so one of my favorite tweets of yours, documentation is the literacy filling in the Swiss role that is Makerspace.
Right. I love that. Yesterday we were teaching the kids about documentation. I was making a little film piece for the school. I came to Makerspace teaching through English. I call myself a recovering English teacher. I have a poetry degree. I taught middle school and high school English for 13 years. And in that time, I was also lucky enough to teach a little darkroom photography, some maths. So I've, you know, been a little bit all over the board, which is the joy of working in an independent school. But in that time, I really got to see how kids will enthusiastically respond to things they're actually interested in. And as the Makerspace teacher, I can get them interested in things and be kind of obstinate about the fact that if you want to figure out how to do that really cool thing, you're going to need to read these fairly difficult directions, and I'll help you do that. And then when you're done, you're going to share that work with an audience wider than our classroom by making a video, by writing a blog post. There's a lot of different ways we can do that. But everything we're doing in that space essentially hinges on these central literacy activities of reading and writing.
Interesting. And so if you were to sort of attribute yourself to sort of one philosophy of education, would that be sort of project-based learning or makerspace? Or what's the kind of easiest way to explain that way of going about things?
I think in the models that are popular right now, it would probably be that project-based learning makerspace. In a broader sense, you could pull back and just say progressive education.
Yeah.
Because if you look at what John Dewey was talking about in the 1930s. He was talking about finding ways to get kids to do stuff they care about and allowing them to find the world through those activities.
Yeah, so actually get them engaged first.
Right, when they care about what they're doing, when they feel like they have a personal investment, they're more engaged. And you can manage a lot of that by giving them choices. And the more tech that becomes available, the more opportunity teachers have to create choice. When we were working off of a mimeograph machine and you had to have everything run off 2 weeks ahead of time, mm-hmm. It limited your ability to pivot towards a student interest in the classroom. But now that I'm teaching on iPads and laptops and web pages, if a student comes up with a great idea in the middle of the class, that can change that lesson, you know, for that student or the whole class in that moment.
So being adaptive as well.
Being adaptive and responsive, definitely.
So you mentioned iPads and so on, and obviously we're talking about Karno as well. What's been some of your experiences in how to inspire those students or get them engaged with the subject matter through some tools, whether that's, you know, kit or apps or other mechanisms as well?
You know, there's a lot of different tools out there, especially for makerspace. It seems like there's more and more coming out every day. And some are like, build a headband with LEDs on it, kit. And some are
things
like...
But if you're in a rock band.
Right? That would be awesome. I've got kids right now who are like, you mean we can work on Halloween costumes in here? So, you know, there's all of that. But on the other end, you've got things like the Kano kit, where there's important initial work for the kids to do, the putting it together, that gets them kind of tuned into what the different parts do. But then once you get inside of Kano, there's a whole menu of choice about what the kids are learning. And when I've used Kano, mostly I've done it in an after-school class called Build Your Own Computer. And I run this actually with some of my youngest students. I intentionally undercut the lower end age recommendation on Kano. And if they can read, I will build this computer with them. And there were even some kindergarten students who really weren't over that reading mark yet. Wow. They struggled. But anybody who could read and was interested in computers were willing to kind of put the time in to figure out what the screen said. Because on the other side of that effort is their very own Minecraft machine, because it has Minecraft Pi Edition built into it. And when they tire of Minecraft, there's Python they can learn, and there's an art program they can do, and there's Sonic Pi that they can program in. And all of these things are available to them as a choice. So my essential philosophy is to get the kids doing things and making choices.
And so, for example, in a classroom setting, if you've got a variety of kids and they've made the computer, do you then allow them to say, okay, I'm going to do Minecraft or I'm going to do this? Or do you do it as a group, or are they quite sort of self-directed in how they go about once they've actually built that computer itself?
You know, there are times where I'll make a suggestion and I'll say, you know, what's really cool is Terminal Quest. And then I'll play a little bit of it in front of them, and then I'll turn them loose to work, and half of them will end up on Terminal Quest. But as much as possible, I try to only have us all doing the same thing when that's really, really important. Like the very first time we're in Minecraft and we're learning how the controls work, and I want to make sure that everybody, you know, has that basic understanding, then maybe we're all there lockstep together. But as much as possible, I want to make it a situation where students can choose how they're doing things. You know, once they understand how I want documentation to come in, if they're like, well, I want to use Google Slides instead of Keynote, sure, fine, just make sure I get it. But it's a daily exercise in challenging myself to let them make the choices.
It takes that half of the educator to, you know, allow them to go down their own roads and so on. But
well, things get a lot easier if you say, you know, I want everyone to do this right now. But then you're on the hook for whether or not it's successful. Like, I love giving students the ability to choose and then holding them accountable to those choices so they can really understand the relationship between what they chose to do and what they got done.
And that teaches them responsibility and resilience and all of the...
self-efficacy. Yeah. And, yeah, exactly. And the fact that what's amazing is the students go from thinking computers are complex and something that other people far away build to, I pretty much understand how a computer goes together and I can put one together, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's funny. I just spoke to someone previously and that was their kind of, I guess, one of the key benefits they saw is that it really empowered these young children who could then go and tell other children that they'd actually created a computer, which was quite mind-blowing at that time.
And one of my missions is to help foster a community of creators and not consumers. And that's, you know, part of that is coming at it from the background of somebody who's taught a lot of writing. I know that when kids can communicate with the world and tell their story, they're going to be in a position of greater power than they were otherwise. likewise with computers, we want to get them behind the screen instead of just in front of it.
That is, yeah, that's a very powerful way of looking at things, I think. But one of the things I was going to ask, actually, going back to your work with poetry before and mm-hmm. literacy, I haven't read, but I can kind of hopefully guess at what the blog and the book is getting at with the title Beyond the Hour of Code or part title. So I suppose the question is, not all schools will have a makerspace coordinator.
Right.
And, you know, how can something like Karno be relevant beyond the hour of code and beyond that idea of this is about computing?
Well, the one of the things I love about the Karno computer kit is that it is based on the Raspberry Pi computer. And Raspberry Pi Foundation has done some amazing work just trying to democratize computers and creativity. So if I'm in a position where I can get some devices in the room for my students to work with, and those can be Karno kits, that gives me the ability to not only do some standard computing, even Google Docs and that kind of thing now with the Raspberry Pi 3 infrastructure, but it also opens up the door to this hardware end of computing, whether it's connecting servos or sensors or lights. The Raspberry Pi computer at the heart of the Karno kit has spots where you can use jumper wires to connect auxiliary hardware directly to the board and then program those in Python. And while that sounds super complex, once you have the kit in hand, it really isn't. So if you're a teacher looking at teaching circuitry, programming, you know, these kinds of things, it's immediately available to you. I think there's a lot of room for it in the world of STEM education, mm-hmm. because if you're doing data collection or temperature logging or anything like that, there's protocols that the Raspberry Pi can do with that immediately. There's just so many opportunities for doing that kind of work, and the Karno brings them all together in this kind of small package that has the support built in, but also the choice.
And you mentioned the support, I suppose, you know, what's your experience of that been? Because I know that, well, I see that you've worked in sort of EdTech or had that time alongside EdTech development. And previously there has been this sort of hit and run approach sometimes with sort of dropping kit and, you know, it gets bought and that's the kind of final experience. But what's important, I suppose, in terms of the benefits are felt in a school if the investment is put in initially?
Well, you know, the trick is making sure, you know, just as we want to make sure that students have choice in what they're doing, we really want to make sure that teachers have some choice in, you know, what tech is in their classroom and what they're supporting, because it does take a little bit of support and does take a little bit of awareness and understanding of what's going on in the, I don't know, 200, maybe 250 Karno kits I've helped people assemble. There have been three or four where there was a small problem, and those are usually resolved really quickly because you can, you know, there's the operating system is on one small chip, and if there's a problem with that, you just replace that small chip. And the hardware is produced fairly well. I mean, there's really not even, I've seen more kind of regular hardware issues with the iPads in my classroom than I have with the Karnos we've used.
And then the other thing I noticed is that you, I don't know if you still work there, but as an advisor to, is it Kaizena?
Yes, yeah, I worked with them for a number of years.
Yeah, which is interesting because there's, I mean, that seems to be getting taken on more and more, recorded feedback and trying to relieve that drain on teacher time.
Yeah, and the Kaizena, that's a Google Docs add-on that allows you to leave voice comments for students. And what I love about that and what I was really excited about when they were developing it was the human voice, as a podcaster, you know, carries a lot of information, a lot, you know, the tone, the pace, all of that. And giving students feedback on writing is an emotionally charged situation. It can be really difficult to do it in the best circumstances. So, you know, giving them just words on a page, they invent the tone in their head, and you have no control over what that is. But if you can record what you're saying, you know, you can say, wow, that first paragraph was really bad, in a way that shows you care about that student. Right?
Yes, yeah.
It's like, imagine. Whoa, Bob, that first paragraph, that was a stinker. We got to run at that again.
Yeah, you can drop a few truth bombs in there, but, you know, deliver it in the nicest way possible.
Right. And if you put it in writing, you would have the parent in your office the next day saying, how could you say this to my child?
Poor Jimmy. Yeah. And then the other thing that's quite interesting, so I'm not sure if you pronounce it, is it Pachu, your community that you developed before?
It was an acronym. I'll often pronounce it Patui, but I was working in Palo Alto, so it started as the Palo Alto Tech Using Educators. It was a Twitter chat that I started years ago when I was still teaching high school. And once it got started, there was always people saying, well, I'm not in Palo Alto, can I participate? And so then I started telling people it meant puppets and technology, usually excellent.
Amazing. Retrospective acronym of choice.
Right.
So you've got 11,000 followers on Twitter now. Has that come about through the innovative work you're doing and being active on Twitter? What's kind of, brought that community together for you?
What drove the Twitter community was really that chat, because I was running that chat for, I think, 2 years, once a week. And what was interesting was I used that Twitter chat to teach myself what I needed to know to jump from an English education position to an elementary tech position. I can actually remember there was a job interview I was going for, and they wanted to talk about, I think it was project-based learning, and I hadn't spent much time studying project-based learning at the time, and so I said, all right, tonight's Twitter chat's about project-based learning, and people sent me amazing resources, and I studied up essentially all night and went in incredibly well-prepared to the interview, but, you know, all of the knowledge was essentially wet paint.
So it didn't stick there and then, but...
Well, you know, it certainly came, and I think that it was shortly thereafter that I realized that I could take I was teaching Julius Caesar, and it wasn't working, and we launched a PBL to create puppets to act the play out, and that was in my last year as a high school English teacher, but that was really what propelled me kind of into the world of puppets, because I'd started trying to figure out how to make puppets, because at the time, I was trying to figure out, in addition to PBL, flipped class learning and how I could make videos in order to support my students' learning and use time in class better. And the frustration I had was I didn't really like my own voice a ton, and I didn't like looking at my own face, which makes it really hard to record videos. So I said, well, I wonder if I can make puppets, because I learned to sew a long time ago. And then YouTube taught me how to make puppets. And the kids were like, why are you making all of these puppets? And instead of explaining it was because I was crazy and trying to learn something, I said, it's because we're going to do this PBL. And then I got all the kids making puppets, and that really stressed my boss out, because suddenly the kids were bringing sewing machines to English class. She did not understand that.
But, you know, at the end of the day, did they understand Julius Caesar in a better light, do you think?
Well, and what I told her was those kids put more Shakespeare's words out through their mouths than I could ever have gotten them to do if we hadn't been working with the puppets. You know, they actually worked on blocking problems and tried to figure out how would we film this scene and what would that character say and what are they feeling and what's going on here, in a way that when we were doing, you know, read alouds in class, they would just kind of head down and power through the words and, you know, who knows what it said.
And so if people want to watch it...
Yeah, I do some vlogging on... if you search Sam Patterson, EDD, on YouTube.
Okay, cool.
Or look for user newspoet67. I should show up under either of those. And I've been I've been trying to vlog very regularly this year. Every Tuesday, I'm putting up new makerspace reflections. So Brilliant. We're doing really innovative work in the makerspace, and I'm trying to keep track of it and share it by putting up these videos that talk about, you know, what we've got for content, what we're learning, how we're coming to these decisions, all of that stuff.
And you've got the Ellie Maker hashtag. Are there any other hashtags for people that are interested in makerspace activity?
I like Ellie Maker a lot. Chrissy Vendosdale. Oh, I'm bad at last names, great, because I could probably tell you she's Venspiration on Twitter. She started that hashtag. And the other person I follow a lot more than a hashtag is Josh Burker. Burker. He has been working with the Constructing Modern Knowledge people, the authors of Invent to Learn. And Josh actually just started as the Columbia University School Tech Integration Specialist. Okay. He's been doing interesting work recently with circuit bending, where he takes electronic toys and solders more resistors in and makes them sound weird.
I love that.
But the kids find that very engaging.
You need to get the puppets on that case and do some kind of hybrid.
You know, I've got one puppet who has three LEDs in his chest. His name is Notorious LED. And I'm always looking for more ways to integrate circuitry and puppets. So you can bet that'll come.
So anyone listening, you should send in your ideas and we can get them made in action. And then finally, any other Carno activities coming up that you want to use the kits for, or are you going to plan on interacting that with the puppets?
Well, I mean, have you seen the new Kickstarter material they've got out?
Yes, so, I have. Yeah, I know they've just launched that.
The new round of Carno kits includes a pixel board, which is really exciting for programming because you can get the kids to make different shapes and animations show up on the pixel board. There is a camera they can build themselves. And as a former film photography teacher, I'm super excited about that. And as somebody who's having the kids make puppets, cameras are great. Because one of the reasons the kids make the puppets is they work as physical avatars. So if the students make a video without their face in it, but with the puppet's face, we can share that on social media legally without getting in trouble. So having the kids build both puppets and cameras makes a lot of sense because then you give them the avatar and the way to use it.
Well, and then just finally, so, and you also podcast. So do you have a different handle for your podcasting or?
No, you can pretty much, everything goes through my Twitter handle one way or the other.
Okay, great.
But we're on the Tech Educator podcast here in the States every Tuesday evening. But that publishes once a week. Last night we were actually talking about voice commenting in Google Docs, and we had Matt, I want to say Harrington, the inventor of or the developer of Orange Slice, which is a Google rubric tool.
Cool. Well, yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out. Hopefully we'll connect with you guys about the podcast as well. And
definitely.
Have an amazing day at school, and thank you very much for your time as well.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to me. Appreciate it being on the show.
Thanks, Sam. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.